Welcome back to the Social Work Social. My name is Melanie Matthews, and I'm a registered social worker. Last season, we explored the world of mental health treatment by sharing information and stories told by social workers. This season, we're going to go even deeper by exploring how different helping professionals work with social workers to support mental health and well-being, and also to pursue social justice. Before we get started, I have two disclaimers to make. The first is that you should be aware that all the information presented in this podcast is specific to Ontario, Canada. Different professionals follow different rules and restrictions dictated by their regulatory body in their area. The second disclaimer is that nothing in this podcast should be considered medical advice or treatment. You're unique. That means that what we talk about today might not be quite right for you. So if you're interested in any topics presented here, be sure to get in contact with a professional directly. That said, let's get into today's episode. Today we're going to speak to Kate. You may remember her name from Season 1, Episode 11, when she spoke about her work as a social worker. She has a social service worker diploma with a specialization in Indigenous care, and since we last talked to her, she's graduated with a Bachelor of Indigenous Social Work from Laurentian University, which is an amazing accomplishment. If you want to hear more about the work that Kate has done as a social worker, you can listen to her full interview in Episode 11. However, in this episode, Kate will not be speaking as a social worker, but rather as a parent to two children. You might be wondering why a parent has been included in a series about professionals. Parents perform many functions in their children's lives, including supporting their mental health and advocating for them, just like a professional social worker or other professional might. Kate is going to tell us about how she does just that. This episode has a trigger warning for pregnancy loss and child abuse.
My name's Kate. I am a BSW student at Laurentian University, and I was on episode 11 way back when, like 2 months ago. And yeah, any questions, just go to that episode and can have all of them answered.
I'm so glad that you came back to talk again, Kate, because you have incredible experiences. And I know that this season was supposed to be about allied professionals, and sneaky people who listen to episode 11 will know that you are, in fact, a social worker and not an allied professional. But of course, everyone has different aspects to their identity. And one of yours is that you are a parent. So can you tell us a little bit about being a parent?
Yeah, being a parent has its ups and downs, I'll say. Of course, I have two beautiful children, one who I birthed and one who we are in the kinship process with through Children's Aid Society. Both equally my children.
Both equally love you, as I can attest to, because I have seen them on FaceTime.
Yeah, they do love FaceTime. They're so funny.
So for our viewers who might not know, what is kinship care?
So kinship care is essentially once the child has been apprehended from the home, they go to next of kin is what they would prefer. But in my case, I am a cousin to my daughter. So we were the closest family members that were prepared to take her and to just welcome her into our home on a moment's notice.
That must have been, I mean, a really big event in your household. What was it like when she came into your house for the first time?
Wow. I actually cried. Those that listen to season one know that I lost my daughter through miscarriage, and I never got to bring my daughter home. And it was such an emotional moment for me. And she was just there on her very first overnight at our house. It was not a huge deal at all. So the fact that it made me so emotional, it just, I don't know. It just, there was just something, like we all felt the difference, the shift, the whole everything, because we're going from a family of three to four. My husband and I are no longer outnumbering our children. It's chaos at all times. But there's also just this feeling of complete. And for my husband and I, it just felt right. It just felt like it was what we were meant to be doing.
Oh, it's amazing. It's such a beautiful moment. Yeah. And I can imagine that really changed your family's dynamics. What was your son's reaction when you brought him home?
My son is the most beautiful soul. He was like, you know, mommy, I know my sister's in heaven, but like, it feels like I have a sister now. He calls her baby girl. That's his baby girl. Can't, like, nobody can tell him different. they're best friends. You would never know that they have only really been in each other's lives for 4 or 5 months.
That's incredible. Caring little boy.
So emotional. I don't know where he gets it from. It's not me.
It's really amazing that you're so open with him as well, in terms of being able to tell him that, you know, his baby sister is in heaven, and being able to share that with him rather than hiding it from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I thought long and hard about how I was going to address that with him, because he was only 3 when we lost our daughter. But he went through mommy's body changing. Mommy, why is your tummy so big? Why is it so hard? He was asking questions. He felt her move. Like, it's something that you can't just take away with no explanation. And so we've named all of the children that we've lost. And my daughter's name was Harper. So we would tell him, look, Harper had to go to heaven. She wasn't able to be with us, but she loves you and she's gonna be here for you. And that's how we've kind of just played it, whereas they're very much a part of our family, but also not here in a way. I just thought being open was way easier than trying to hide it and just being like, well, there was a baby, but now there's not, and having no real reason why.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be horribly confusing for a child to know that, you know, mommy's going to have a baby, and then all of a sudden the baby never shows up. Developmentally, like, 3 is old enough to grieve, and taking away that right for a child to grieve for their baby sister feels like a terrible thing to do. So being open, letting him be a part of that, opening him into the family and in the grieving process, feels as though that has a lot to do with how caring and compassionate he is.
I hope so. I mean, we try our best to be open and honest. And that's something I always wanted as a kid and as a teenager. And that's just what I want to be able to give to him.
So your family is beautiful, and you've had a lot of beautiful moments with them. But I know that it was a really long, hard road to bringing your daughter home, and dealing with Children's Aid Society is not always the easiest thing to do. So what was your experience like? The CAS and the social workers that work there.
Oh, okay, where do we begin? So at the very beginning, once we first were contacted from CAS stating that my cousin had been apprehended, I had a woman that was very almost abrasive talking to me. Like, she didn't know the child. I don't think she really knew the case in general. She was just making her phone calls, which is totally fine. But I also understand how much they probably get yelled at and, you know, all of that stuff. So I kept trying to be like nice with her, and it got me so frustrated because they originally denied us for kinship because at the time my daughter's birth mom was pregnant and we were not prepared mentally to take on a newborn, which meant, they were canceling us for the kin process, meaning she would stay in a foster home rather than coming home to family. So naturally I did my crazy mom thing and I escalated it, and I ended up talking with their lawyer, and it was just crazy that they completely disregarded what on paper, I mean, I think my husband and I look pretty decent as social worker and a special constable. I mean, they don't get away with anything. So once we finally talked to the lawyer, and it actually had to go to court for the courts to say, no, it's not right for you to keep a child in foster care just because you want a sibling that is only 8 weeks in the pregnancy to go to the same home. So that was our first interaction, and we ended up in court. Over the process, we've been going through this process now for 13 months. It took, I think, 7 months for her to even start having visits with us because CAS kept dancing around the subject, which was terrible because this poor little girl who had gone through enough trauma before she was 9 months old that we wouldn't even go through in a lifetime is being put in these homes with strangers. And it's a choice that she's there. CAS made the choice to keep her there rather than give her to kin. So once we started visits, I think that was our fourth CAS worker in the 5 or 6 months. We did visits with the birth family, and then we did visits just on our own. And then she started to come every other weekend. And then starting Halloween, we had a full legal guardianship of her, and she was with us every day, every wonderful day now.
Wow. It is kind of incredible to think that CAS didn't want to put her with two very capable, very qualified parents, kin parents, mm-hmm. just because you weren't prepared to take on a child that hadn't been born yet as well. That's such an incredible decision. And I don't mean incredible in a good way, but incredible in a completely unbelievable way.
Yeah, I honestly, when she told me that, I was like, I had to stop for a second because I'm like, did she really say she wants to keep this one-year-old in foster care? Like, I couldn't wrap my brain around it.
Yeah, and because the foster system itself has so many issues and so many problems. And I think you mentioned that she was in a couple of different foster homes as well, being bounced around when she could have been with her family months earlier.
What we're really fortunate is that her final foster home before she came to us, she ended up in the most beautiful place with the most amazing people that are more involved in her life now than even her birth parents are. So we were very lucky that she ended up in a very loving home for her last foster home. Fingers crossed, it's the last one she'll ever have to go to.
So tell me a little bit about the process of going through four different social workers. What happened?
Yeah, that was just four before she came home. I feel like there's such a high turnover rate. And I understand just coming from a social work background that it's probably a lot of burnout. It's a lot of compassion fatigue, a lot of just everything. And I understand people taking leave and moving to new jobs and whatever, but four workers in 5 months, that's my daughter's meeting four new faces, trying to get used to four new faces. When one of the things that they say they try to do in Children's Aid is limit the amount of new people that these kids have to meet, especially new adults, when most of the time their trauma with these children lie with their adults in their life.
So yeah, it must have been such a difficult thing both for you to navigate the system and constantly having these faces change and the people that you're dealing with change, but also for your daughter, because she has to deal with these people too. This isn't just a legal thing. They have to get to know her. They have to see how she's doing. They have to evaluate what's happening in the home. And to do that, they have to talk to her. And for a little girl who's been very traumatized by the adults in her life, having to meet all of those new people must have been really hard on her.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm a little happy for COVID because everything's a lot more virtual and there's not as many people coming in and out of my daughter's life, which especially an agency like that, right? Like it's intimidating for not only the families, but for the children. So I like the virtual part of COVID just for the less people in my daughter's life.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Did you have any good experiences with the social workers at CAS? Any positive ones?
Yeah. One of the social workers we worked with in Guelph, you could actually tell that she cared about my daughter. She wanted to know, even after she moved into our home, how she was. She sent a thank you message to me just being like, thank you for saving her. Thank you for being there for her. And she was just so nice. I can't even say enough good things about her. She would bend over backwards. It was amazing.
It's a really striking difference between the way that social workers operate, even within the same system, between one person who, you know, is looking at this as purely, you know, from a legal and from a planning ahead kind of standpoint in, you know, denying you kinship care. And another one who's so grateful and thankful that you were able to make a difference in your daughter's life. and take her in and be able to make her a part of your family rather than just having her live in a foster home. Because you can't really be a part of the family in a foster home. You're just living there. Even if the foster family is absolutely wonderful, it's still not quite the same.
No, and that's true. Especially my family, we're so close. So we were just so excited to welcome her back mm-hmm. after 9 months of being away.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a relationship with your daughter prior to her being apprehended by CAS?
Yeah. She was apprehended at 9 months old. So we saw her a few times before. Her and her parents would come to our house, and her and Grayson, I found a picture actually of the two of them a couple weeks before she got apprehended, and they were just both so small, and it was just so sweet because now I look at them and it amazes me what their friendship and just little love has turned into.
Absolutely incredible to watch that blossom, that new relationship between siblings. Do you feel as though this has changed your perspective on being a social worker? Because I know that since adopting your daughter, you have started a new role in your social work capacity. So has this experience changed the way that you operate in your own work?
Absolutely. Since going through this experience, I have actually started working for a CAS organization in Toronto. I work not in child welfare, in food sovereignty, but I'm still interacting with these families on a daily basis. And I now have such a soft spot for the child welfare system because I've been able to see it with CAS growing up in my own life with myself and my siblings. I've been able to see it from the kinship adoption process. And now I get to see it as a worker, which it's such an interesting role that I get to play, seeing it from all three angles.
What exactly is your role at CAS?
I am the Circle of Care Coordinator, and I get to essentially feed our families in our community. They register for food hampers, and we do food support, dry goods, and I always try to have fresh produce and milk, try to get stuff like eggs and all that fun stuff that people are really struggling to afford right now with COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that I haven't looked up the statistics lately because honestly, a year in, I'm just kind of avoiding looking at statistics too often now. Yeah. But I know that food bank usage went through the roof during COVID. It's become a huge, huge issue. I mean, it was a huge issue before, but it's even bigger now.
Yeah, I'm servicing anywhere from 10 to 25 clients a day. And we're turning away people because we don't have the capacity, which breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine how difficult it would be to have to tell a family, we don't have any food for you today. Incredibly difficult. It's kind of interesting that you have this position within CAS though, because CAS has this reputation of just being social workers swooping in and stealing children, which I mean, kind of fair because it absolutely has happened, especially among marginalized communities, that social workers from CAS have in fact swooped in and stolen a bunch of children. But especially with the CAS that you work with, they do a lot more than just apprehend children. There's lots of other services for families that are in there as well. What other services besides child welfare and food support does CAS offer?
I mean, I can only speak for the specific one that I work for, but we offer youth programs in employment. We offer housing support, transitional housing. There's shelters, pre and postnatal care. Like the list goes on and on and on. It's more than just child welfare. And I feel like a lot of times people forget that. For example, the program I run, you don't actually have to have any involvement with the child welfare system. You can just be a family or even a couple. Don't even have to have kids that needs food support, and we're there to help.
And I do like how you pointed out as well that you can only speak for the CAS that you work for, because that's something people don't realize either. They're all called Children's Aid Society, but every Children's Aid Society, every geographic location that's served by a Children's Aid Society is all independent. they're not the same. They're not regulated across, you know, all of Ontario. And it's not a thing. They're all very, very different. And interacting with one can be very different than interacting with another.
Absolutely. And they all have their own sets of policies and procedures, which makes it very confusing, especially as a kin parent, where one thing is okay at one CAS that we're a part of, but where my child's birth family CAS is a part of, it's not okay there. So it just makes it very complicated because everyone's beats their own drum and goes on their own merry way.
Definitely a frustrating and flawed system that we have in place for child welfare.
Absolutely. But it has its perks.
Yeah. In this case, it made it possible for your daughter to be able to have a home with you. And so that's a happy ending. That's a very positive thing that CIS was able to do in this circumstance.
I mean, we're nowhere near the end, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's something that I will never forget.
How long does the kinship process take, approximately?
So let's just say my daughter got apprehended in February 2020, and she did not get placed in my home for guardianship until Halloween. And we will probably not see any legal documentation of adoption for at least another year. It's a very slow and long dragged out process, which, I mean, I understand completely, but it's definitely frustrating.
Yeah. And I mean, it is totally fair. You can't just hand out, you know, legal guardianship to just anyone, right? And you have to make sure that you can in fact support this child and love her and take care of her. So I can totally understand why it takes a little while, but man, is that a long process.
Yeah, but I think in the end it'll be worth it because my daughter's in a safe, happy, and she's healthy. That's all I could ask for.
If you could sum it up in just a couple of sentences, what would you want people to know about being an adoptive parent?
Be honest. I find being honest to your children is just the best thing you can do for everyone. And just don't give up. There were so many times I wanted to just give up and say, screw this, it's too hard, but just don't give up.
What gave you the strength to keep pushing through?
Oh, my daughter has the most beautiful curls, and she's just so beautiful, and I can't say no to her. She's got me wrapped around her little finger.
Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story again, Kate. You have such a unique perspective and such an amazing heart, and I'm so glad that you were able to come and share the story today.
Thank you. I was happy to be back.
Thanks so much to Kate for sharing her story with us again on this episode. The work that she and other parents do is incredibly valuable and should be recognized as such. Caregiving for children is often undervalued in our society, which is why I'm grateful that Kate was able to share her experience with us today. Next week, we're going to talk to Rob, who's a health promotion specialist. Thanks for listening to the Social Work Social. By sharing information and stories, we hope that you will gain new knowledge and empathy for those who are different from you. All of us have unique backgrounds and experiences, but through our stories, we can learn to relate to one another. Our communities are currently facing extreme challenges, and we all have different strengths and skills that we bring to the table to help combat those challenges. Through working together, we can make a difference. I challenge you to go outside of your comfort zone to find an issue that you can lend your support. Tune in next Friday for another episode of the Social Work Social.